Mr. Lobo with us. We're going to take your phone calls, questions about horror films, your stories, your own personal story. And if you also want to share your age, I'm going to ask you if you go to movies or not. It's just a little private survey. And welcome back to Coast, Mr. Lobo with us. We're going to get calls in a second. Now, a few people have decided they don't want to give their age, and we will respect that and not push them for their age, though that means they're probably older than dirt, and they don't want to tell you. So, Mr. Lobo, tell us, since you've been doing this for years now, and of course...
17. July 28th.
That is fantastic. And you have fun doing that, and that's important, isn't it?
You have to, you know. I mean, once it stops being fun, it's time to hang it up, you know. I think it has to be fun. And you know, my wife always makes fun of me when I get scared, but it's like, you know, if I get scared, I'm getting my money's worth. You know, so...
Do you ever get so scared you don't want to go to bed, or you feel like you can't... You got to turn the little light on out there somewhere or something?
I always go, I check the locks. Sometimes I'll put something up against the door, you know, just in case. Put a chair or something right up against the door.
I love it. All right, let's take some calls. We're going to go to first-time caller Bo, truck driving in Oklahoma. We're going to ask him his movie question first. Bo is 34 years old. Hi, Bo. Do you go to movies?
My son was born last year, so I haven't gone to a movie since, but... before then, me and my wife would
graduation
quite a bit.
You'd go to a lot. Okay, great. But go ahead. You're on with Mr. Lobo.
When I was a kid, I'm really thrilled to be talking to you right now, George, because I've been listening Coast to Coast since I was 9 years old every single night.
Thank you.
I go to sleep every night listening to the show. But one of the movies that still scares me to this day when I watch it is Fire in the Sky. With Travis Walton, yeah. It was, you know, it was such a psychological thriller, you know, it just right off the bat was scary.
That's the one with D.B. Sweeney playing the part of Travis Walton. You know correct. That story, Mr. Lobo, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my wife is terrified of that movie. She would probably say that's probably the most. Aliens is the one thing that my wife loves horror movies more than I do. And that's the one thing that gets her is aliens, and she cannot watch that movie.
I know Travis Walton well. I go to a lot of events where he is a speaker, and I'm a speaker, and it is really strange being next to him, believing that this guy was abducted by extraterrestrials. It's a weird feeling. It really is. And you know, he passed the lie detector test.
That's right, yeah. I think they took it more than once, right, from what I understand.
He and his logging buddies. Hey, Bo, do you have a question for Mr. Lobo?
No, I was just calling to let you guys know that was, you know, one of the movies that, you know, still scares the crud out of me to this day. You know, just the psychological part of it, is, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, it really is. Next up, let's go to Alex in British Columbia, Canada. Alex, by the way, is 50 years old. Alex, do you go to movies?
Not anymore. But I used to go, at the ages of 20 to 30, I used to go every 2 to 3 weeks.
Wow. But the older you got, though, you slowed down and stopped.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I hit 30 to 40, I was going maybe once a month. And then in the last 10 years, I think I saw 3 movies.
Just 3. Geez, you're breaking up a little bit, so we'll have Tom check your line and see if we can get a better connection for your question for Mr. Lobo. It's our buddy Tom in La Jolla, California, who simply says, I'm older than George.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Tom. Do you go to movies anymore?
I'm older than Santa Claus, so, I mean, it's... and, you know, the last time I was in a movie theater... was 30 years ago, and...
That's when you saw John Wilkes Booth jump from the theater.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. I and a lady that I was dating, we went to see a movie on the spur of the moment at a multiplex, but it was sold out. And so we asked what other movies were available, and we went to see... John Carpenter's They Live.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
We sat through that movie twice that night. And the lady I was dating was scared out of her mind for months. I was just, my jaw dropped.
Did she at least hold your hand and grip it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect.
She just was, I called that intelligent horror. And this is the question I wanted to bring to Mr. Lobo.
Yes, John Carpenter's They Live, excellent film, by the way. Big fan of that movie, 1988, and there's the special Hoffman lenses that allow you to see the strings that are being pulled behind what we think is real life.
Oh, yeah, and the acting, Keith David and Roddy Piper was fantastic. I mean, they just...
Put on these sunglasses, I'm going to make you eat that garbage can.
Yeah. You know what I really wanted to ask you about, Mr. Lobo, was there's another director of intelligent horror, and that's Canadian director David Cronenberg. And Scanners, one of my favorites was Videodrome with James Woods. He's done other movies, Naked Lunch, Existence. And it's Videodrome is a good example of a movie that's, virtual reality gone haywire type of thing and hallucinogenic. But Cronenberg creeps up on you, as you watch a movie by him. And I was wondering if you would comment. I mean, it just seems like all of his movies are...
All of his, I've heard the term body horror associated with his films, and a lot of them all kind of have to do, there's a physicality to everything where it's getting inside of us, or it's part of us, or it's in our body. And I think that I think that's the ultimate intrusion, I think that's the ultimate violation, and I think that he really uses that. Even in The Fly, he's just falling apart in The Fly, the Jeff Goldblum Fly from '88. It's also from '88, like They Live, but it's a really and his attention to detail is amazing. There's always great makeup effects, and David Cronenberg stands as one of I would agree with you, one of the most intelligent directors, where he almost has a genre to himself. His movies are kind of all go together, and they have the same theme coming back again and again.
Let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Welcome to the program. Hey, Frank, how are you?
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. Mr. Lobo, you help. You're one of the fine people who make this coast to coast the exercise and excellence which it is.
Bless you. Why would you say such lies? But thank you.
I'm 70 years old, and I want to ask you a question. The House on Haunted Hill, which George alluded to, was one of the scariest movies that I used to look at. I looked at it through my fingers.
Yes, and, of course. Scaredy vision is what I call it.
Was laughing at me at the Catholic grade school. We used to get movies. Some wealthy benefactor used to give us the movies at about the same time they came out in the theater. Now,
wow, that's nice.
That's cool.
I want to ask you a question about Vincent Price.
In between
House on Haunted Hill, and did he do The Telltale Heart, which George plays every 6 months or so? What did he do in between those two films?
What did he do in between?
When did it come out? Then I can get an idea about it.
Well, let me think here. Well, House on Haunted Hill.
1959.
59. He did, probably did The Tingler, probably right after, right? Or right around. George, do you have The Tingler on the computer?
Let me see if I can find
another
that.
Another William Castle, and I think that was maybe right after. Am I wrong about The Tingler? I don't know.
We'll get that.
I would put The Tingler in there. And then he did a lot of these films with Roger Corman, with the Edgar Allan Poe films. He did Mask of the Red Death. And The Pit and the Pendulum. He did a lot of Edgar Allan Poe themed films for Roger Corman.
Tingler was in 59 also, Mr. Lobo.
Okay. So I guess those are some things that may have happened before. But the Tingler's a great one. You know, it is another one with a movie house gimmick like House on Haunted Hill. House on Haunted Hill had the skeleton that went across the audience. The Tingler had the buzzers in the seats that was supposed to represent the creature getting loose, and you had to scream so it wouldn't grab onto your spine and get you.
1990, he did the part in Edward Scissorhands. He played the professor.
Yes, he created Edward Scissorhands, and of course he died before, he died in real life, but in the film, he dies before he finishes his hands, which is why he has scissors for hands.
The classic Vincent Price story is he was offered a percent as opposed to a salary in Michael Jackson's The Thriller.
Not have a salary.
He was offered, well, this is what happened. He was offered either or a percent of the take or yeah. just a nominal salary. He took the salary. He said,
I can do that one better. He got paid with a painting of Michael Jackson.
That was probably worth something.
Yeah.
Next up, let's go to Chip. He's in North Carolina, 49 years old. Chip, do you go to movies?
I'm sorry?
Do you go to movies?
I do. Yes, I do. I just saw The Nun.
Super.
Not too long ago. And
it's on my list. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's awesome. It's part of the Conjuring. There's five mm-hmm. movies so far in The Conjuring.
Yes, I love those.
Yes, they're great. What I called you about is what's your thoughts on The Fog and Phantasm, which are two of my favorite horror movies from the early 80s.
The Fog.
I absolutely love Phantasm. Phantasm was made on the weekends. The kids who made Phantasm, they smoked dope all week, and then on the weekends they shot Phantasm. And when Coscarelli, it took them almost a really long schedule. I think it took them almost a whole year to shoot all the footage for the film. And but when they put it all together, it was a great blend of sci-fi and horror, and imitated a lot throughout the 80s. I think it kind of harkened that sort of blend of fantasy, sci-fi, and horror that you see in a lot of later 80s films. And the Tall Man stands as one of the most memorable screen villains of all time. And The Fog is truly creepy, great film, great atmosphere, Adrian Barbeau, great ghost story about the lepers.
1980
lepers
with that
come
one.
Come back for the gold through the fog. It's just so good, you know. There's so many great performances. Hal Holbrook as the priest, which I think was originally supposed to be Donald Pleasence, but I don't know what he was doing at that time. But, you know, it's just John Carpenter, again, we've mentioned several of John Carpenter's films, Halloween being one of them,
mm-hmm.
They Live being one of them.
The Fog was one of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, John Carpenter, you know, next to Stephen King, I mean, John Carpenter dominated the 80s with a lot of really wonderful imaginative films.
Were these inexpensive movies to make?
Comparatively, I mean, they weren't like Star Wars movies, you know. I think that the great thing about a horror film, the beauty of a horror film is that, you know, you can scare someone, you can take $60,000 and make $14 million.
Yeah, if you have the right distribution, absolutely.
So that, I think that that's why it's such a hardy genre, because you can make it on the cheap. Usually the darker you make it and the more indistinct it is, the more the mind takes over. You know, the less of the shark you see, the more effective Jaws was. The less of the alien you see, the scarier the alien was. So, you know, there is a lot to the slight. It's very easy to overproduce horror. I think if a horror movie has too much money in it, it seems protected. You know, you look at the second Terminator movie, you know, it doesn't play out like a horror film like the first one, because there's just too much money in it and it feels like a franchise. So, you know, a horror film, you know, you almost need to cap the budget, because if you put too much money into it, it stops seeming like a surprise. And if you can see the train coming down the track, no one shouting boo is going to scare you, you know. So it has to kind of be a sleight of hand. It has to appear spontaneous. And I think that's why a lot of low-budget horror films like Night of the Living Dead, which is mm-hmm. for $60,000, are incredibly scary, and they're cheap.
actors like Bruce Campbell have made a living doing lower budget horror films, haven't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's like the Olivier of
he really is.
And you know, and I've, you know, I got to interview him, and he's a charming guy, and you know, he loves you know, he pretends he doesn't like it, but he likes it. He likes the attention, he likes the fans.
He likes the paycheck.
He likes the paycheck, absolutely, you know. And Evil Dead is a great a film for an actor. I mean, he pretty much is carrying that whole movie on his back. He's putting himself through you know, all of these sort of, it's almost like a Chaplin mm-hmm. film where it's you just following him through all of these tableaus that they've created for him. So not too many actors can carry a whole movie on their back.
What do you think of the Stephen King movies from his books that all seem to have that horror type feeling for it? Pet Sematary, It, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I like Stephen King's films a lot more than the books. I mean, I'm a film guy. You know, people always say, oh, well, the book was better. It's like, they're not exchangeable commodities, you know? I mean, a dance is different than a sculpture. You know, a book is different than a movie. It's just, you know, when you're in the mood for a movie, you're not in the mood to read a book, and vice versa. And, you know, what works in a book doesn't work in a movie. And I think that a lot of my favorite Stephen King stuff is all the short stories. I think his novels are too padded, too long-winded. You know, mm-hmm. from what I understand about Stephen King, and I've never met the man, but, you know, he doesn't know where the story ends when he starts. He just keeps writing. He's just as surprised as we are, because he just keeps writing and drinking and writing until it's finished, you know, and then, you know, 500 pages later, it's done. So there's no plan going in, which I think allows for him to surprise. You know, again, there is no formula. So I think that that's why his books are so surprising. But I think at the same time, you know, a good director can kind of boil that down to its essence. You know, he hated the film The Shining, and the film The Shining, I think, stands as one of the best pieces of art in the 20th century. So, I don't know.
What about TV shows that are dealing with horror, like The Walking Dead and things like that?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, The Walking Dead definitely, I feel like, owes everything to Night of the Living Dead.
Yes.
And, you know, now it's kind of come down to the mainstream, come down to the front line. You know, you go into the Walmart and you see the, you know, the rubber ears that you hang around your neck, or the, you know, the whatever, Dead Inside signs. And, you know, it's all, it's very commercial. You know, I think that, you know, it's a soap opera. And I think it's kind of cowboys and Indians, too. I think that, you know, modern zombie movies, you know, and a zombie is an enemy that you can shoot and not feel so bad about. And we don't have, you know, we're in the world of, you know, we're a very politically correct world. There aren't many screen villains that you can kind of indiscriminately shoot down, mow down with a gun and have no, repercussions.
We're going to come back and take some final phone calls in a moment with Mr. Lobo. Mr. Lobo, give out a couple of your websites.
Yes, cinemainsomnia.com and osi74.com.
And we've got that linked up for all of you at coasttocoastam.com. So stay with us. Those of you on hold, we'll do the best we can to get up to all of you when we come right back on Coast to Coast. And then next hour, we begin to talk with Dr. Marilyn Schlitz about The Other Side, Life After Death. Her latest work is called Death Makes Life Possible. How about that? So we'll be back in a moment with final calls with Mr. Lobo on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take final calls when we come back with Mr. Lobo. And talk about movies with you, of course. Skype is open at George97313. Want to give that a try as well. Welcome back, Mr. Lobo, with us, of course, in your calls. Mr. Lobo, are there companies in Hollywood that specifically work on doing horror films, lower budget horror films?
Yeah, there are. Right now, Blumhouse is the big one, and Hammer has been back. The British company Hammer has been making horror films again, and like I said, Blumhouse makes The Conjuring and all those, I believe. you know, there are a lot of smaller outfits that do the same. And I think, again, it's the kind of movie that you can make inexpensively. It doesn't even have to have a big name. If people are intrigued by the subject matter, they'll go see it.
Interesting take. Do people make movies for YouTube?
People do make movies for YouTube. I mean, YouTube's having a lot of problems with indies right now because they're changing a lot of their rules and stuff in favor of their own YouTube Red, which is their, they're trying to develop their own programming. And but there are, you know, on Vimeo and YouTube and Twitch and every kind of other thing on the internet, it's amazing that the instant distribution of, you know, being able to make a program and upload it and you know, accessible to millions instantly.
Have you ever been in touch with our old friend Dr. Morgus?
Oh, I would love to talk to Morgus. You know, my show aired in his market, and I got such wonderful stories from his fans about his show. But I accepted an award for him once. There was a Horror Host Hall of Fame in Indiana, and they were acknowledging a bunch of horror hosts on stage, and they wanted someone to come up and say something about Morgus. And for whatever reason, they didn't have anybody there to do that. So I went up and said a few words about Morgus. But, you know, he's one of the originals, you know, from the Ice House.
That's right, Chopsy.
And, he would have these incredible experiments. Chopsley. And I think he pretty much created the Nutty Professor template. And, I feel that Jerry Lewis probably ripped that off, I'm imagining.
It may not have been Jerry, but it might have been the producers that took advantage of that.
Perhaps, but The Wacky World of Dr. Morgus, I think, is probably the first movie about a horror host that I know of. He was beloved in St. Louis and in Louisiana.
And Detroit.
He had a remarkable run. Of course, he's always been a favorite guest of mine whenever he's appeared on Coast to Coast AM.
I ended up working at the TV station in Detroit that he was working at. He had left, so I didn't meet him there, but he was my boyhood idol. I loved the guy. And
how could you not?
And then we got to know each other through Coast to Coast, which was an amazing thing. And for Christmas one day, my network flew him to Los Angeles from New Orleans as a present for me. And this was so weird, Mr. Lobo, because I was on the phone with him, interviewing him. And all of a sudden, his voice got more and more distorted. It was strange. You could hear him. But it was just echoey. And all of a sudden, he walks into my studio. There he was. He was my Christmas present.
What a great trick. It's like a seance. He appeared.
And what a talented guy. He was innovative. You know, during those days, we didn't have a lot of computer animation and things like that. Everything he did was innovation. And he was funny because his experiments all failed on television on purpose. Yes. But everything he did failed, and it was just hilarious.
It was like watching a magician. You know, he would create this illusion so perfectly, and then he would shatter it. It's really amazing. Really amazing to see his stuff. Very funny.
So
very clever.
He came into the studio and we're live, and he said that he has invented a new force field barrier that stops anything, and he told me to take a swing at him. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And he said, George, this works. Now pop me right here in the mouth, hit me in the mouth. And I did, and I knocked his tooth out.
Oh, my God.
Everything he touched.
Oh, my God.
Anyways, let's go to the calls here for you.
One of a kind.
We go next to Trisha in California. Trisha's 78 years old. Do you go to movies still, Trish?
Oh, I love to go to movies, and I actually have about three friends that also like to go in
Good
my age range. And but I like quality movies, Like, I saw The Martian, mm-hmm. and I saw the Sandra Bullock one where she was in outer space.
Interstellar? Is that
was a good one. Interstellar was a good one. Are you going to see First Man about Neil Armstrong on the moon?
I would love to, yeah. I didn't know it was coming out yet.
Yeah, but it's out. It's coming out. It's maybe out now, but it's out this month.
Absolutely. And I love science fiction. Like, one of my favorites was Starman.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is also John Carpenter. Also John Carpenter.
Who starred in that one, Mr. Lobo?
Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges, okay.
And Karen Allen, who was the love interest from Indiana Jones, basically was E.T. for adults. You know, basically an alien comes to Earth and has a relationship with a human woman, and then he's got to go home.
I love
it
that.
It was a wonderful movie.
Now, do you watch things at home too, Trish, with DVDs and streaming and stuff like that?
Not too much, no.
All right, interesting. Interesting.
There's too much violence in the movies anymore, and I would go to the movies a lot more often if they'd give up the violence and go back to quality movies.
What's your all-time favorite movie? No matter what, horror films, straight movies, what's your favorite?
Ghost.
With Patrick Swayze. Yeah.
Yeah. That and While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock.
I remember, this is an interesting story, Mr. Lobo. I'm at a restaurant with Tom. It's called The Great Greek in Los Angeles. And over in the corner is Patrick Swayze. And Tom, of course, being the producer that he is, went up to the table, introduced himself. And this was while Patrick was still fighting his cancer.
Sure.
But asked him to come on the program, and he was working on getting him as a guest on the show.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he died of pancreatic cancer.
But
what a nice guy he was. And I loved him in Ghost, too. And it was a great thing. And the music makes these films, too.
Yes, a great score can certainly make a difference. I know that you know, before they added the score to Star Wars, they just thought it was going to be a dog, but I think that John Williams score is just the perfect touch. You know, it somehow elevates the material.
Yeah, I think so, too. And Whoopi Goldberg was great in Ghost, by the way.
Whoopi Goldberg was, that was a great role for her. And that's a problem, I think. Hollywood has a lot of difficulty with people who are multi-talented and comedians and female comedians, especially, of giving them good roles or finding good projects for them. They don't know how to use these people who are so incredibly talented. I think that's a rare occasion where they found the perfect role for her.
Let's go to Brian in Alabama. Brian's 53. Brian, do you still go to movies?
No. The last movie I saw was The Devil's Advocate. That's been a while.
That's with Pacino, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I hated that movie.
In Keanu Reeves, I think. Yeah. I like that movie.
Oh, I hated it. Oh.
I actually went for my birthday. My birthday is October 30th, and my wife and I went out for my birthday then.
Well, you got one coming up, too, so happy birthday.
Yes, thank you very much. I had a comment of, I being born at 65, the first really terrifying movie I ever saw was The Exorcist. And I remember my parents didn't want me to watch it. And so I watched the movie and, of course, had nightmares later that night, of course, as a kid. But one of the thing that really scared me as a kid, and that I don't know if y'all remember these, they used to have the spook shows at the theaters. So those were really scary.
I actually performed a spook show for Blobfest this past year. We in the town where the film The Blob was shot. During the film The Blob, gets loose in a theater during a spook show.
So oh,
watching a spook show,
screaming
and
yelling.
The Blob gets loose. So we decided that this year, since it was the 60th anniversary of The Blob, that we would actually have a spook show in the theater. And so we had, had a Swami bring Bela Lugosi back to life. And then we had people dressed as ghosts flying through the audience and touching people. And we had all kinds of gimmicks and nurses in attendance and prize giveaways and a lot of shtick, a lot of corny stuff But those shows used to four-wall. They would travel, and it pretty much was the birth of the midnight movie because, you know, the theaters didn't want to give up their 8 o'clock movie or their 10 o'clock movie. And so, you know, the people who were four-walling, they would buy the theater out. You know, they would show up in town with a film under their arm, a scary movie, and they would rent the theater out after hours. And they would show these shows mainly for teenagers, usually teenagers who wanted a neck, and sometimes rowdy teenagers too. And sometimes they did them as matinees for kids too. But then they would have these amazing blackouts where they turn the lights out and they would have luminescent ghosts made out of mops that were dipped in phosphorescent paint. And they would have these chains that would be wrapped through the bleachers and they would ratchet them back and forth and it would make all the chairs vibrate. And they had all these great, they would put strings and ice water and throw them out in the audience, and they'd go down to the back of people's shirts, and people would be feeling this cold noodle going down the back of their shirt. You know, there was so many fun kind of carnival type gimmicks that these guys did, and they would go from town to town to town, and sometimes they'd do three movies back to back with all these great gimmicks. And there'd be a magician and sideshow acts, you know, people putting nails through their nose and all that stuff.
What's the appeal of the Rocky Horror Picture Show? Remember that?
Absolutely. I think that did have an audience participation aspect to it. You know, when they have the toast, everyone throws a piece of toast at the screen. People have call and response where they're yelling things up at the screen. You know, there's rice being thrown during the wedding. And I think it's an immersive experience. But I also think because of the sexuality of the film, you know, people who are 16, 17 years old and are kind of emerging into their adult life, it's kind of a naughty thing that they can go and do with their friends. And, you know, they might accidentally see a little skin or something. So I think that all that factored in. And you have, you know, people who met each other as 16-year-olds at Rocky Horror and ended up getting married as adults. And I've seen the shadow cast and the stage for a performance that goes along with the movie performed in various different markets all over the country. And it, over and over again, I've seen people who have met at that show and gotten married. So I don't know what it is about that, but you definitely find your people if you really are into that movie.
Houston, Texas, we go. Robert's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Robert, go ahead, sir.
Good morning, George and Mr. Lobo.
Hi there.
Thank you for the call, and I sure enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
I'm 61 years old, and I haven't been to a theater since about 3 years ago when I went to see a Rush. The Canadian band, their documentary.
Ah, okay, interesting.
Yes. A couple of really quick things. The Shining is a fantastic horror movie. Anything that, who was it that made it? Led the movie?
Kubrick? Stanley Kubrick.
Stanley Kubrick. I've seen five of Stanley Kubrick movies, and every one of them were fantastic.
Absolutely. Doctor Strangelove, Clockwork Orange, they're all amazing.
Yes. You mentioned Sinatra earlier. The best movie I ever saw Frank Sinatra in was The Manchurian Candidate.
He did well there. He did well.
Very well. That was a fantastic
movie. He was a pretty good actor.
He really was. He really, especially in that. That just had so many twists in it that you didn't know about right away. But, boy, it's so diabolical. Anyway, one other thing. The first horror movie that really scared me, and nowadays I still like to see one occasionally, okay? They're not my favorite, but I was about 10 years old at my grandmother's house. Everybody was in bed, and I had to turn the TV down very low and lay on the floor about 2 feet from it to be able to hear it so everybody would sleep. Yeah. And it was called Black Sunday.
Oh, yes, with Boris Karloff.
Black Sunday.
Right?
I remember that. What was there one called Black Christmas or something like that?
There was Black Christmas that was Bob Clark, who went on to direct Christmas Story of all things. But Christmas, there was a killer that was terrorizing sorority sisters who all lived in the same house. and he was calling them from inside the house.
Oh, that's spoilers. Creepy. That's creepy.
There was also, it's a very creepy film, really well made, structured horror film. John Saxon is amazing in it, and it's the template for a lot of those kind of movies from the 70s. Like I said, that guy went on to make Porky's. He went on to make A Christmas Story, a lot of other films in different genres. But
some of these movies, Mr. Lobo, are creepy. They're not pure horror, but they're creepy. There was one with Bo Bridges, I believe.
Yeah.
And his wife went into a fast food place or like a quick shop. And never came back out. He couldn't find her, and apparently a truck driver had kidnapped her. It was just a really well done movie. And
that sounds familiar.
And they ended up burying him because the truck driver says, "Do you want to know what happened to your wife? Do you really want to know?" And they knocked him out. It was called The Vanishing.
Oh, okay, yeah, I've heard of that. I don't know if I've actually seen that.
Keith or Sutherland? Was it Bo Bridges or Keith or Sutherland? I think they were both in it. It was good stuff. But Mr. Lobo, we're out of time, but we got to get you back again, my friend. Jeff Bridges was in that movie, The Vanishing. Mr. Lobo with us. Up next, we're going to be talking about Death Makes Life Possible.